And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where it is very fitting that at this very moment in a barren studio in New York City, New York, I am wearing a Grantland hoodie that took me 5 years to get because I am joined from Los Angeles by the man they call the Podfather, Mr. Bill Simmons. How you doing?
How did you get the Grantland hoodie? I forget the story.
Not from you.
That's for sure. You get it on like eBay?
Rafe saw that I was in LA and he was coming on The Jump to promote the book that he and Jackie did based on Dan Clore's monumental documentary. And he said, "Hey, you're in LA. I'm coming on the show. I actually have an extra one that I never wore. Do you want it?" And I said, "Wow, finally."
Wow, black market Rafe.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's been a really fun NBA season. I have no idea where it's going. It reminds me a little bit of the 2015 season when we talked ourselves out of every possible title team, and then Golden State ended up winning the title. And even as it was happening, we were slightly confused by it. And it reminds me of that year. Nothing would surprise me. I think there's like 10 teams that could win the title.
Wow. 10 teams.
No. Yeah, I don't think 10 teams actually have a real chance. I'm just saying I could see 10 teams in the finals just randomly.
Well,
I really could.
Because you are or were or both a gambling addict, we have decided to make this podcast slightly based on the 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 9 10 teams that have the best odds in Vegas, Las Vegas, Nevada. That is, of winning the NBA title. And we'll start, I know you want to talk about this game, so we won't start here, but one of those teams is Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
I feel they're a very good team. I feel confident saying they're a very good team. Russ has had such a weird season and their depth is so scattershot that I'm still trying to get a feel for how good they are, but they're on this list at 20-1, tied with Philly. And games like last night, which is what I know you want to talk about, are just like every time I start to feel a little confidence in them, they lose at home. That like they have a weird game where they lose at home, like last night to Minnesota. They've had the easiest schedule in the whole league, which is really hard for a Western Conference team to have the easiest schedule in the league to this point, which means they have the hardest one left.
Yeah.
That was a crazy game last night. Every time Minnesota and Oklahoma City play, it's a crazy game. I don't know what is in the DNA of those teams, but it's a crazy game every time. What was interesting to you? We both watched it. What did you take away?
Well, just going back to the 10 teams thing for a second, I think the reason I feel like 10 teams have a chance is because all of them might improve between now and mid-February. There might be one trade or something for at least 7 of them. Like, I don't think Golden State can improve their team other than Boogie coming back. But there's other teams where I look and I go like, well, what if Milwaukee turned the Bledsoe spot into a better player somehow, you know? Or I'm trying to think about like Houston. Do they stay with Eric Gordon, or do they punt on that, use their picks, use Eric Gordon, and make a play at somebody who's better than them? That's why I feel like we have to list 10. And I don't know if 10 have an actual chance to win, but I think 10 are in the conversation, which seems like a lot. But going to that OKC Minnesota game, I'm just so fascinated by Wiggins. We were talking about it on the Ringer NBA Slack all morning.
You're such a hit. I don't even know if hipster is the right word. Slack. You're on Slack? I'm not on Slack.
Listen, we have teamwork and camaraderie over here at the Ringer. We like to hear each other's opinions. And we have argued about this Wiggins thing. He's both untradeable and a trade asset. And last night is the reason why. He's only 23. He had a game where he had 18 free throw attempts, 10 rebounds. He had 40 points. He was electric. He played harder than I've ever seen in my life for him. And yet, if you look at his 9 games before that, they were abominable. So it's like, what do you do with this? So he's just like that guy for this generation. Like a couple people, Dan Devine and somebody else threw out the Jeff Green comparison. And it's funny how we always have these Jeff Green type of guys in the league. And it does feel like there's been a torch passing, where he is now the frustrating guy who has all the tools and it's tantalizing. And if you catch him on the right night, you go, "Oh my God, why isn't that guy like one of the 10 best players in the league?" I was just fascinated. He was the best player on the floor yesterday in a game that had Paul George and Russell Westbrook and Towns in it. So what do we make of this, Zach?
Well, the Jeff Green thing, Rudy Gay kind of became the go-to one for a lot of people.
Yes, he did.
Including me. And it just goes back to, like, the Jeff Green, Rudy Gay, Andrew Wiggins thing is, if you need the ball, but you can't shoot threes and you can't play make for others, it's just hard to be an actual good winning NBA player, even if you look the part. Like, if you just, and so, like, can you shoot threes? Can you play make? And the answer for Andrew Wiggins has been his career assist per game is 2 and his career 3-point percentage is 33. He's up to 34 this year and he went crazy from long range last night. Like, until the answer to one of those questions is yes, and I think the best chance at it is 3-point shooting, because he's passing, like, he'll throw a couple of passes a game out of the pick and roll where you'll be like, oh wow, he's really made a jump. I'm going to be the smart guy that, like, writes that Andrew Wiggins' passing has really made an incremental leap, but you only notice if you're watching on League Pass. And then you look at the numbers, you're like, no, it's the same, like, same guy.
And he's the kind of guy that gets a GM fired, because a GM can talk themselves into, this guy just has amazing talent, but this has been the story of the league now for 60 years.
Can you get an owner fired? Can we do that?
No, I mean, the Glenn Taylor thing, and it's funny because if you talk to anybody in the league about Taylor, like, wow, that guy's a disaster. They're always like, he's a nice guy. He's a great guy. And it's like, well, that might be fine, but nobody has done a worse job over the last 20 years. I was hoping they would hire KG as their coach, because the post-game press conferences would have been amazing. He would have been thrown out of at least 10 games. He would have, just by sheer fear, brought out something from Towns and Wiggins for at least 2 months. That would have been amazing. Everything about it would have been awesome. But then I was watching last night, and I was thinking, like, Flip Saunders' son coaching this team is kind of cool. I'm into it.
I'm
rooting for it.
He's the first coach, even more than Walton, where I'm just like, that guy, he's just too young. Like, I just look at him like, he's a baby. Look at him. He's 8 years. He looks like a kid. It's like, do you ever go visit Holy Crossover?
Or not any in a college? While, but yeah, I've been in colleges.
I went to a class at my alma mater this fall, and like, you walk around a college campus, you're like, did I look like this when I was 19? Right. Like, this is a 12-year-old, right? Like, anyway,
Spo was like that too when he took over the Miami job a while back, but I think it's part of the legacy of the NBA that there are these tantalizing guys. That effort is the problem. And Jeff Green was one of the most frustrating players I've ever rooted for when he passed through the Celtics for a couple of years. Cause there were games when, you know, he, like, Tommy would compare him to James Worthy, and it was accurate. It was like, this guy looks like James Worthy. And then there are other games where you didn't realize he was out there for a quarter and a half. And it's just kind of funny that this is a recurring theme as you go along. But I look at Minnesota now, and you look at that team they had yesterday in that game. And they have these two young stars that can go toe-to-toe with anybody. But going back to the OKC argument, you know, 20-1, George has been out of his mind this season. I mean, I really think there's a case for him to be the second best forward in the league. And just for how he's played this season. And it's been really strange to watch that team kind of shift toward him as the season went along. Because Westbrook has been documented all over the place. Is just a shooting disaster. I don't remember anybody 30 and under who just lost the ability efficient as a scorer like this.
You're not allowed to point it out anymore. It's too mean. It's too mean and it's too obvious, Bill, to point out that Russell Westbrook is shooting 23% from three on like 5 attempts a game or 6 attempts a game or whatever it is. If you do that, you get all the people down. Oh, you're so courageous for pointing out there. Well, I'm sorry that Russell Westbrook is literally the worst high volume 3-point shooter in the history of I'm sorry that matters. I'm sorry he takes 5 threes a game and he hits them at a rate that would embarrass Antoine Walker. That matters. I'm sorry that it matters. I'm sorry that it hurts your feelings.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
This is great. I like fired up Zach. Well, like, his percentages, you know, we eat 50, 40, 90 would be the ideal, and he's 42, 23, 61. But
by the way, it's all threes. He's shooting 48% on twos, which is normal for his last 4 or 5 years. Like, the 2-point shooting, it's fine. Like, it's just threes. And to his credit, he's shooting 5 and not 7 like he did 2 years ago.
Right. And he had almost a 31 PER 2 years ago. Now it's down to 20. But when you watch him, he seems the same. Like, he's still, if there's a loose ball, he's getting it. He still gets rebounds in traffic. He's still a force of nature athletically. I mean, maybe he slipped 6%, 7%. He's still the same. He just can't make shots anymore. And when he makes a three, it's now like kind of surprising. And the fact that George has played, you know, so unbelievably well. I gotta say, I never thought Paul George would ever be this good. I always liked him. I always thought he was like a notch below what you'd want as like your franchise guy. He was kind of like a 1B, but I never thought he'd be a 1A. But you watch him this year, and he's a 1A this year.
I still think he's like a 1AB because, like, even if Russ is struggling with his shot, he still is running the show. Like, you don't want PG to be your lead ball handler. He's the absolute, other than KD, he's the absolute perfect guy to put next to Russ, and he's almost more perfect because, unlike KD, I don't think he wants to run 20 pick and rolls and 20 ISOs a game. He just wants to kind of feel his way through the game.
Hold on, though, but this is a good point. He's an old school 1A. Because in the old days, the point guard ran everything, and the wing guy, everything played through the point guard, and then he would get his, and I think he's more like that. We're just so used to the creator now can be any position, and the ball always runs through them. I don't think he's like that, but I don't think it matters. If he's putting up 37, 35, 33 against really good teams, like, this kind of works, and the part that doesn't work is Russ can't shoot anymore.
Well, and he's also a Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
Yeah.
So,
oh my
so,
God, did you see the? You know, NBA has that hustle stat.
Yeah.
And he's like, loose balls. He's number one. Deflections. Like everything that basically signifies effort. He's either first, second, third. He's really been out of his mind this season.
Listeners, you know I love anything that saves me time. And a couple years ago, buying tickets for sporting events or Broadway shows or comedy shows was becoming a thing that took too much time. There's all these sites, hundreds of them on the secondary market. Some of them are reliable. Some of them are not. And you get to the end and you're like, oh, did I forget to check that one? Did I miss a good deal over there? Oh my God, 2 hours has gone by. That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. It solves all these problems. It pulls millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for a price you're willing to pay. It's super easy to use. It has a color-coded system, green dots for good deals, red dots for less good deals. Every purchase is fully guaranteed. That's important. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It just saves you so much time. You know exactly where the seat is. All the seat maps are interactive and easy to use. SeatGeek should be your go-to source for everything. Sports, concerts, comedy, theater, blah, 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 all of it. And best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you got to do is download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code LOW, my last name, L-O-W-E. That's promo code LOW. Bam, $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek. Life's an event, and we have the tickets. So let's talk about OKC for 5 minutes as a team.
Yeah.
19th in offense, first in defense, fourth in net rating. If there's a case for them as a – I don't know what – I mean, they're what are they, third in the West? It's not like they're a sleeping contender, but a real contender. It's A, they're the best defense, and B, all of their core lineups are really, really good. So their starters are plus a million. Their starters with Schroeder in the two guard spot are plus five, which isn't great. Their starters with Abrines, who everyone's forgotten about because he's been out, but I think is a sneakily, you know, they got to get 18 good minutes out of him per game, and when they need shooting, he's important, are plus eight per 100. They're getting absolutely murdered when they sit PG and Russ together, which they don't have to do and maybe shouldn't do in the playoffs. Like, that's some low hanging fruit for them. The case against them is they're the worst shooting team in the entire league. And it just feels to me like as good as they are and as tough and rugged and switchable, and like Grant has been a revelation as the starting four, which is important because Patterson has fallen off the earth. It just feels like they don't have enough shooting. Like they're going to get into the playoffs. They could win a round if luck breaks right. Maybe they could win two. I mean, it's not like anyone scares them other than the Warriors, but it just feels like against really good teams, they're a shooter short.
So I'm higher on them than you for this reason. I think as the playoffs goes along, we definitely saw it last year, especially in the conference finals, it becomes more of a slugfest and everything's a grind and everything slows down and the field goal percentages and the shooting percentages go down anyway. I mean, last year was the ultimate example of this because you had the Celtics and you had the Rockets just crap the bed from three, but it's such a grind. You kind of need the defense effort, rebounding, protect the rim type of team to some degree. Now, I don't think they can win if Westbrook's going to shoot like he's shooting now.
No, but they can't.
You know, and it's tough with him and Schroeder because Schroeder can't shoot either. I still really like that trade for them. I liked it when it happened. I never understood why everybody just kicked Schroeder to the dirt when he was, I think he was like 23 or 24. He had been in big games. I think this is something that people just forget in general when teams trade for somebody. And you saw this again with Austin Rivers with the Rockets. Like Austin Rivers, punching bag, Doc's son, nepotism. He can do a couple things, you know, above average. I think he's a good defender. He can guard guys of different sizes and he can shoot open threes and he's not scared. So you put somebody like that with James Harden, and when they signed him, I was like, that's smart. Well, I actually think he'll play for them.
Also, when your team is like, oh my God, we need like 28 good minutes out of Gerald Green tonight. Yeah, you could use Austin Rivers.
Yeah, and he's been in big games. And I think this goes back to the Schroeder thing. He's not scared. He'll finish games. He'll take a big shot. Now, he's a 30% three-point shooter. You'd want, you know, high 30s. But when you think about it, all right, he's a 30% shooter, so it's 3 and 10. So if in a playoff series, you're taking 40. So that's the difference between he makes 12 versus he makes 15. Like, it's really not, like, dramatic. And the other things that he brings to the table I like – To me, the problem with them is they don't have it. This is the one out of the 10 teams that doesn't really have a trade to make. This is kind of their team. They don't have kind of that expiring contract to move or some way to upgrade the shooting part. And they really just need Robertson to come back and kind of be like that kind of trade piece in February. I have no idea. You would know better than me if there's even a chance he comes back this year. But it seems like that's the missing piece for them.
Yeah, it's always tricky when you get the guys that are like, they're going to come back from really long-term injuries in February and March. I mean, I think we're going to see this a little bit with DeMarcus. Obviously, he's on a different level. But it's like, I don't know. At least Hayward gets the whole season.
Yeah.
And I just don't know that it's fair to Robertson to you want to say, oh my God, when they put Robertson, PG, and Grant on the floor at the same time. And by the way, you get one more big wing like that, you can buy 8-10 minutes of Grant at center if you need to play super switchy down the stretch of a game. But it's like, is he going to be able to play in big game? I mean, well, we already know he's the worst shooter in the entire league among perimeter players.
Right. I like Ferguson too. It's funny when you watch, I try not to look at the plus minus stats too much, but sometimes I'll see a lineup I like and I can't resist and I'll go to the 5-man lineup thing. And Russ, PG, Adams, Grant, and Ferguson are like plus 17 this year.
Yeah, it's
and it kind of confirmed what I was watching because it's like, they're just so athletic and it isn't a lineup that you would put together intentionally, but when you watch it, it's like, this is kind of, get in the Grant signing, which I thought they overpaid a little for him, but I think I was wrong. I like where his career is going, and I like him as a playoff
He's
guy.
He's still really young, and if he can shoot threes at this rate, I mean, it's not a great rate, it's average, but if he can shoot corner threes well, like, the other stuff he does is just, you just can't find guys that can legitimately guard all five positions. Legitimately.
Well, as the gambling guy of this podcast, I will say I like OKC at 20-1, because I like the way they match up with Golden State. The PG versus Durant thing, he's not going to shut him down, but he'll at least make him work. Westbrook versus Curry has always been fun. Curry has always brought the best out of Westbrook, and Adams has always given them trouble, and they have a bunch of weird wings to throw at them. And I got to say, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I like the way Donovan's coached this year. I actually think they look like a well-coached team this year, and we've never said that about OKC before, but this year they looked well-coached.
Well, they haven't. The most precious thing in the NBA is when you have an identity, because it's like a real identity. Like, we all know who we are as a team. We know what we stand for. We know how we play. Like, you can go 10 years without figuring that out. And they have it. Like, they're an absolute pain in the ass to play against. You were a 7-game series against OKC. When it's over, you're going to be like, God, that sucked. That was horrible. We got to play in the next round. We just beat this team. We got to play again.
By the way, Zach, that's a great point. And I always end up talking about this during the playoffs. Like, I want to know by April and May how to describe a team. What are they? And OKC, I know what they are. Last year you could beat them because they weren't deep enough. The Paul George Russ thing was the dynamic was off on that. This year I think they know who they are, and I just think it's going to be a street fight to try to get by them. And I'm not sure Golden State is ready for a street fight with what's happening to them this whole season chemistry wise. Maybe we should talk about them next. They're minus 160. This is pretty heavy favorites, and I don't agree with it at all.
So let's go over the Warriors. They are first in offense, which you wouldn't necessarily guess by all the noise around them. 16th in defense, which is not good. With their four stars in the lineup, they are 115 points per 100, 103 allowed, so plus 12, which is a lot. The death lineup is finally back.
Yeah.
It's up to plus 10 per 172 minutes. Obviously, Boogie is coming back.
And there's a little playing possum. Iggy feels like he has it if they really need it.
I think he's been good this year.
He's been good. Like, if they said to him, we need you tonight, I feel like he would have a vintage Iggy game, you know?
Seems healthy. Looney's been fine, given what they expect out of him. Livingston's shot has fallen off, and he's constantly hurt. I mean, that's a worry. Quinn Cook has been good the last week or 10 days when he's been back in the rotation. They're going to get Cousins back. To me, the two things that worry you are – well, there's more than one thing to worry you. Obviously, the defense.
It's like five.
But if you look at the defensive numbers with Draymond on the floor – they're still the best defense in the league with Draymond on the floor. So the two things that would worry me, if you're really looking to make the argument that they're vulnerable, are Draymond hasn't looked the same all year. Now, I think he's looked better in the last 2 weeks. And weirdly, I didn't realize this till today. They're 29th in shots at the rim, which sounds like it's not a problem, but at least until last season when it slightly became a problem, their whole thing was, yeah, we shoot a lot of threes. We don't shoot like Rockets level threes. And one of the reasons we don't is because the threat of all these guys shooting threes is just a layup line for everybody else because the lane is wide open. And like, that's gone. There is no layup line anymore. Like, a lot of those easy baskets have disappeared. And obviously the thing hovering over all of this is, in a way that is not going to show up in numbers or just going to be hard to see, even watching every single game if you're not living it. I do think, And you've talked to KD much more than I have, so you do, and Rich Kleiman much more than I have. But I do think some of that stuff, the uncertainty about what Durant is going to do, the uncertainty about, I don't think there's uncertainty about what Clay is going to do, but there's sort of like, you know, you just never know. The uncertainty about Draymond, like, is he going to make himself eligible for the Supermax? What if he does? They're never going to offer them that. Oh my God. I think that has seeped into the water a little bit. And you combine it with like Clay's shooting slump. Clearly, no matter what he says about, I don't need anyone's advice, my blah, blah, blah. Like, he was forcing a lot of mid-range shots that took them a little bit out of their offense. Like, just something in the water there got a little out of whack. And it's hard to pinpoint how much out of whack and how to fix it, right?
I think you understated it. You're saying a little, kind of, there's something in the water. I think it's way worse than that. You know, this is now year five. Draymond is not the same guy anymore. He's just not. You go look at his stats. The guy, go watch like the last 8 minutes of this game. The defenses treat him differently now.
See,
dying for him to shoot.
That's the thing I don't buy. I buy that. When the games matter, no one has ever guarded Draymond. No one ever guarded Andrew Bogut. Like, it's not like.
Feels worse now, man. People eight feet off him.
It's more extreme. And it's getting into all of their heads. And he is obviously less able to, like, make a baseline threshold of those open threes. That matters. Like, if you get two of those a game, man, game seven, they lost against the Cavs. He scored 30, whatever, hitting three after three. Like, if he can't do that anymore, yeah, that's a problem. But, like, they know how to navigate that. It's one of many things that has sort of gone sideways on them. You're right about that.
So the Draymond thing is the first thing, because he just doesn't seem like the same guy to me. That the guy in during the 25 game winning streak was a force of nature, and it's just headed a different way. And he's scoring, you know, 5, 6, 7 points a game, and he's a non-entity. And then Clay has not been the same as a shooter. He's gotten a little bit better lately, but we keep hearing about, well, they have four all-stars. They have four of the best 15 guys in the league. It's not the case anymore. They don't have four all-stars. And they don't have four of the 15 best players in the league. So that's one problem. I think teams are used to playing them. And even deeper than that, they're used to playing against that kind of style. And you think about where we were in 2015. It was just so different what they were doing. And now it's like just about everybody plays some version of it, you know. And you see it day after day after day. I don't feel like there's a fear factor with them from other teams. And you see it really like, I don't know how many of the Kings Warriors games you've watched this year, but those have been some of the most fun games this season. And the Kings are they're a young team that's never done anything, and they're at least not afraid of the Warriors. They go at them. And I don't really remember that happening 2 years ago. So I think that's a problem. And then, you know, the KD thing, having 1 foot out the door, and what happened at that Clipper game and how serious that was. You know, I've always been one of those, I'm fine when teammates yell at each other, guys. I think it's healthy. I played basketball my whole life. You yell at your teammates. Jacoby and I played at USC for 3 years. We would yell at each other. We're buddies. It was never personal. I thought what happened at that Clipper game became personal. And I think it's taken them a long time to unravel, and it really, you know, it really kind of unearthed some bad stuff that seemed to be seeping in, which, let's start here. Is Durant leaving? Whose team is this? There's Durant Curry stuff that I feel like, you know, Durant's probably one of the three best players in the league and has been for a while. And it's not his team. It's Curry's team. It's Curry's city. And I don't, all this stuff, it's fine in year one. It's fine in year two. But then when you get to year five, it's almost like a relationship. It's like when you're dating somebody forever and little things start annoying you. And that's what I'm seeing with them.
Are you taking the field over the Warriors?
Yes, I am.
Wow. I'm not there yet.
I am absolutely taking the field with them. Now, we didn't mention what Durant and Curry are doing together right now is kind of historic. Nobody's really talked about it. Or maybe they have. I haven't seen it. But Steph's at 29.4 and KD's at 28.5. Now, just to put that in perspective, I went through all of NBA history to try to find if two teammates have ever averaged 28 points a game. Do you think this has happened?
28 a game on the same team?
Two teammates, 28 a game.
Are we counting the ABA?
Not counting the ABA, but it didn't happen there anyway.
Well, then I guess it's got to have happened once. I just can't figure out who. Maybe not, though. 28's a lot. I'll go no.
Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, 1962. That was 38.3 and 30.8. 38. All right, but
oh my God,
KD and Russ were 28 and 25.4 in 2015. The closest is Kobe and Shaq in 03. Kobe was 30 a game. Shaq was 27.5. 1987, Bird and McHale were 28 and 26. We had an Alex English, Kiki Vandeweghe year of 29.4 and 26.4. My point is, like, this doesn't happen. And you have two guys who are basically at the peak of their offensive powers. I think Curry looks, I would say, 97% what he was during his greatest season, the 36-5 season. And KD is, you know, it's a vintage great KD season. So that's why they have to be taken seriously as
KD
favorites.
KD's 28-7-6 on 50-36-90. And I know he wants 50-40-90 again. And he's short on the threes. Like that's an under, everyone just kind of like, oh, PG's been unbelievable. This guy's been like, yeah, KD's just humming along at 28-7-6 on almost 50-40-90. He's had another great year.
It's the first team all NBA between all those guys. God. It's pretty amazing, but I would give Paul George like by a hair over KD, but I always default to KD because I always feel like first team all NBA, you almost have to have somebody take it. And he's done a lot this year, but man, Paul George has been
Still more a default, even though I have made Paul George as a boss a catchphrase of my life. I just love Paul George. Ever since those Indiana Miami playoff games, I've just said this guy's unbelievable. That's one where I just default. You know, I haven't obviously made my all NBA picks. I won't till the end, but that feels like a default to like, okay, like on a gut level, who do you just know is better? Like who do you just,
true.
You know, who do you know is
that's,
a better player? Like KD's
that's what
better.
I did last year. So KD is 27-7 for his career. This year he's shooting 51% again. I think this is a crazy stat. The last 7 years, counting this year, he's been over 50% field goal, but he takes a lot of threes, you know, and I just don't think there's ever been anybody quite like him. I think we're at peak. I've never seen anything quite like you before with some of these NBA guys, and I think he's at the head of the list.
I'm still taking them over the field. Maybe I'm being naive. I just think, along with all the other off-kilter stuff you and I have mentioned, I also just think it's hard to overestimate the just malaise and complacency and, oh my God, we got 40 more games until we start playing in the playoffs. Like, when can we get to the playoffs of a team that's been there this many times? I do think, you know, about KD's future. I predicted in my wild predictions column that he would sign with the Knicks. Obviously, I did that because I think there's a chance that that happens, or else I'm not just going to make a prediction if there's a 0% chance. I also did that assuming they would three-peat and he wouldn't care. Like, that is, like, winning is not going to be the reason he stays. Another title, I almost thought, like, I wonder if they didn't win, if he would say, well, now I'm pissed. I want to come back and I want to win again with this team and this new arena. However, someone told me the other day, you probably underestimated the if they win, then he's got a chance to win four in a row, which no one has done since the Celtics.
He doesn't care.
You just don't think he cares?
I don't think these guys care like that about that stuff anymore.
Wow.
I really don't. I think they want to win, and then they win a couple times, and then they think about what's next. They don't. I've done six podcasts with him. He doesn't think about legacy like that. None of these guys do. I think LeBron's probably the only one. LeBron knew, like, the eight straight finals thing was a big deal. LeBron knows that he needs more rings to kind of catch Jordan. He understands the totality of his statistical resume, and he gets all that stuff. I just don't think these other guys do. I think Westbrook cared about triple-doubles. I think he cares about the triple-double thing again this year.
All you have to do is ask him. He doesn't care. It's all the media. It's all the media creation.
He 100% cares.
It's all the media creation. It's all us. It's not him at all.
I do think, and I've heard, I can't remember who first thought of this, so I really apologize. Like, I love giving credit to people. Whoever was the first one who said that the 27-7-7 should be called the LeBron, I really do feel like the LeBron is more impressive to me than a triple-double. You're putting up 27-7-7, and you do that 55 times in an 82-game season. Like, that to me is so much more impressive than a triple-double.
I was watching Knicks Blazers the other night. It's a sad statement about your life right there. Yeah, I was up watching Knicks Blazers the other night.
That's right.
And I hadn't realized this. I believe it was Nurkic. Mike Breen, the legend, was saying how Nurkic recently had a 5x5 game, which if that happened, I somehow just missed that in the box score. And he was saying the 5x5 doesn't get enough attention. Like, we go it crazy doesn't. Over these 5x5 is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
If you get a 5x5 game, you frame the box score, the jersey you wore that night, and like that's a once in a, like, Giannis hasn't had a 5x5 game, and he's like, he is built, literally constructed with limbs and jumping ability. He's built to get a 5x5. He still hasn't had one. That's a cool one.
I don't know how we're going to remember this year yet, but I think the actual regular season has been the year of, like, just the incredibly goofy box scores where Harden's doing things that just have no correlation to anything.
It gets to the point you look at the box score, like, a Harden 9 of 23 from 3.
What is that?
But my brain just goes right by, and then I have to look back and be like, no, that's a 2 and a 3 next to each other, and it represents how many three-pointers he took in one game. Like, that's insane.
And we should talk about them in a second. The only other thing I would say about Golden State, I still don't like their 6, 7, 8, 9 guys that much, and I really do weirdly think they need Boogie. I do think they need him. I like Iggy, obviously, as the fifth. Jarebko, you and I have always enjoyed. Other than that, I don't trust anybody. I don't trust one other guy on that bench.
I would like to see them play Utah in the playoffs only because the Jarebko Jazz tension for, like, one season.
Yeah.
Is so, like, the Jarebko revenge game where he tipped it in at the
bottom.
I love when random guys just harbor a grudge against a team they were on for, like, a month. It's just like, I still hate that team. I'm going after that team.
By the way, speaking of weird five-man lineups, Utah has that one lineup that Favors isn't in, that their plus-minus is, like, plus 80. Or, you know, it's like the Rubio, Mitchell,
Crowder, Ingles, Gobert.
Yeah. So that's why I don't want to officially write them off yet as a first round.
No, if you told me
first
right
round
now,
upset pick.
If you told me right now, let me look at the standings, that they're 20-21 and they're ninth. If you told me right now they got into the 4-5 series, now they're 5 games in the loss, so I'm out of that. I don't think that's crazy.
They're 60-1. They also have one more trade to make. Like, Korver was the first step, but they could get. I'm still not sure they need Favors, and it would be interesting to see if they flipped him because he's got a pretty big contract.
Also not sure they need Favors. The Utah Jazz are also not sure. They could 100% trade him.
So you could flip that with something else, and get one more chess piece, and now I'm intrigued.
And I think that's a team, you know, we always, with these trades, it's like the Woj breaking the Kanner or Zebo expiring for expiring
kind of thing today.
With these trades, it's always so much about the cap and like how much space did they free up and like, oh, they got a great contract in return. And Favors has this, I think it's 16.9 non-guaranteed for next season. So he's essentially an expiring. And Utah has or could have a lot of cap space. Like when they got Korver, people were like, well, you know, he's got 3 point whatever guaranteed next season that eats into Utah's cap space. Like Utah's cap space for what?
Yeah, exactly.
Durant is going to put Utah on the list all of a sudden. Utah is a team that, like, if they could turn that Favors contract into, like, a pretty good player on a two-year deal, they would get some flack for, like, well, they added money. I'm like, well, but if the guy's good, like, that's the kind of team that should be able to, should make that kind of trade. Anyway, that's enough.
No, wait, hold on. This is a really important point. I think this is the great trade inefficiency right now. Like, I like Tim Hardaway as an asset. I really do. I think
I'm not going with you there, my friend.
No. I'm saying if you're a team like Dallas and you're going to lose your pick unless it's top five protected, you have Wes Matthews and as an expiring, and you could just flip Wes Matthews for Hardaway, and Hardaway is just better than Wes Matthews. I just think he's a better scorer. I actually think he's become underrated because he's in this position on the Knicks where he has to be like their number one guy. He's like a number five guy.
He is taking a lot of tough
shots. He's taking high volume, end of the shot clock. Like that's why his stats aren't as good as they should be. But he's not afraid. And I think on the right team, he could be, you know, kind of a fun rotation bench guy.
He makes 18-1 next year, 18-9 the following year. That's a lot. It's a lot for Tim Hardaway.
Yeah, that is a lot.
It's a lot.
Damn it. I forgot about the third year. I thought it was next year and that's it. God,
it's an option, but.
For
Tim Hardaway's option. So it might not really be an option for him.
Oh, he'll be exercising that option. Dallas is my favorite team that I just want to see get better because I love Luka so much. He's honestly my favorite non-Celtic in I can't even remember how many years. And, I just want him to have the right kind of guys around him. And right now he doesn't. And it's really annoying. But anyway.
Listeners, there's another time saver you should know about if you are starting off the year by trying to hire someone, and that is ZipRecruiter. Right now, you should go to ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, all one word, the name of this podcast, and ZipRecruiter will help you find the right people in a snap. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter finds the quality candidates for you. It has powerful matching technology that scans all these resumes out there, identifies people with the right skills, education, experience to fit your job, and then actively reaches out to those people to apply. So you get the qualified candidates without doing anything but posting your ad. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S., and that rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, best of all, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at that exclusive web address I gave you before, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, the name of this podcast. If you love this podcast, show your support by going to ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. That's my name, L-O-W-E, post, P-O-S-T. ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. It is the smartest way to hire. Who has jumped more times this year? You or DeAndre Jordan? Like you just in your normal run of life. Have you jumped more times than DeAndre Jordan?
Oh, man. It's sad because I was going to the Clips game 6-7 years ago when he was, you know, when he had the hops and really played with a ton of passion, and now it's like just stat chasing.
I'll tell you, I'm active on the playground with my daughter. I may have jumped more than DeAndre Jordan this year. Yeah. I'm not messing around on the playground.
That's a rough contract, but it expires after this year, so at least I can get out of it.
I realize that sounded bad. I'm active on the playground with my daughter. I didn't word that well. I meant I'm running around. I'm participating in the playground environment, like, you know, trying to entertain her.
Yeah, whatever. You listen, it's out there. You said it, and there's no going back. What about Houston? Do you believe in Houston at all?
Here's I don't want to go to Houston yet. Here's what I want to do. You listed these 10 teams in an order of likelihood that they win the title according to Vegas. I believe it went Golden State, Toronto, Boston, Houston, Milwaukee, Oklahoma City and Philly tied, Lakers, Denver. And you told me there's one bet I really love among that group. And I said, don't tell me what it is. Save it for the podcast. So what is the bet among that group that you think is very good?
Lakers 30-1.
I'm glad it's not the Celtics.
I'm traumatized by this Celtics season. I'm actually too negative about them this year. I watched too much. I've watched too many threes with 19 seconds left in the shot clock. Too many guys not going to the basket. And it's been one of the most frustrating seasons of a team that's going to finish with like 55 wins that I can remember.
Now they are, I believe they're second in the whole league in net rating. Now,
they've beaten the crap out of some teams.
If you took out the Bulls win, they might drop, that alone might drop them from like second to fifth.
Zach, they've fallen behind by, I'm going to say like 12 points at least 10 times this year. Like, this is a team that is constantly like trying to come back, and it's bizarre because they have as much talent as anybody in the league. And they just haven't figured out how to put everything together.
You know,
it's frustrating.
They're Draymond Green. We'll get back to the Lakers in a second. I don't even like talking about the Lakers because the Lakers are just such the story.
But here's why they're 30-1 in a nutshell. If they made a trade and got a second guy and LeBron is in the playoffs, like, you have to take them seriously.
You have to account for that possibility. Do you expect them to do that, or don't you expect them to just save everything for AD over the summer?
You know how I feel about this. This is my big complaint with the Harden trade way back when you and I were two voices crying in the wilderness that was one of the dumb trades of all time. When you have a chance to win the title, I feel like at some point you have to go for it. And you can't kind of cross your fingers and hope something's going to happen down the road unless they know from Rich Paul that Eddie's coming, which I don't think they do. They have pieces that actually they could flip for either a lower level star or, you know, Washington claims they're not going to trade Bradley Beal. I don't know if I believe it if Ingram's on the table, you know, or could they make a run at Davis right now because they know the Celtics can't trade for him until July because of the rules. So they just do they Godfather offer him now just to get him.
I think they would love to do that. I don't think New Orleans is entertaining that at this point.
New Orleans is dumb.
Well, I think there is a chance. There's always a chance. I think there's a chance that New Orleans arrives at that point before people expect them to, which is in July, if and when Davis says no to the Supermax. I think there's that timetable could be accelerated quite easily. Now, I do think they're going to start. They're about to embark on a 6 or 7 game stretch that may make or break their season, and they're starting to get healthy. Peyton's back. Mirotic is back. So I think they're a pretty good team that has underachieved. But they could always arrive at that place earlier. I just don't expect them to do it. I expect the Lakers and everyone else have to wait until July when you and I and everyone else that covers the NBA is not going to be able to sleep for 8 straight days because it's going to be so crazy.
Do you know what I would do if I was the New Orleans GM?
I'm afraid to even hear the answer to this question.
I'd have a press conference and I would say, look, we have a talented team. I don't want to hear it. This is not KG in 2007. Stop it. Drew Holiday is really good. He's an all-star or a borderline all-star. Julius Randle is good. Mirotic is good. We have good role players. This is not,
I like how you just yada, yada, yada the whole roster after their four.
Well, they have some role players, but it's like, he's not on the Bad News Bears. Like, it's crazy. And I just feel like,
in other words,
if he was that awesome, which I think he is, I think he is the most talented power forward of all time, they should be able to win 48 to 50 games with how awesome he is with the roster they have. So that's on somebody. I don't know whether that's him, whether that's Alvin Gentry, whether they're playing too fast, whether they're stupid about not getting a real point guard and rolling the dice with the Elfrid Paytons of the world. There's a million point guards out there, Zach. We have the most point guard deep league we've ever had. Go get somebody who can be a half decent point guard for you. I don't know. I just wouldn't trade him yet, but I would put the onus on him and just be like, look, man, we have a pretty good roster. Like, let's see it.
It is something that
you don't agree with my strategy.
No. It is. It's an interesting question that has been posed to me because particularly in the Western Conference, to look at any player, even LeBron James, and say, well, just your mere presence on the roster should guarantee me 48 wins. Like, the Warriors are 27-14 with both KD and Steph and two other really good players, and obviously they've had injuries and stuff. The West is just really hard. Like, no one would say that about Damian Lillard. No one would say that about Rudy Gobert or even late stage Chris Paul or prime Blake Griffin, but it does feel like Anthony Davis is the level of talent where that question is fair, where that question is, if you're this good, if you are called rightfully so a generational talent.
Yeah.
I haven't really spent that much time seriously grappling with the question, like, you know, how many guys on a roster like this have won this many games and this, that, and the other thing. But it does strike me as one of those sort of social media trope questions that in this case is fair and interesting. He is that good.
I'm just tired of hearing that he's playing with the Bad News Bears, because he's not.
Well, part of the
KG in 05, 06, 07, when that team cratered after 04, it was traumatizing to see how bad his team was and the crap that they saddled him with. And at some point, even Minnesota fans were like, this sucks. We got to find him somebody else that's better. Cleveland last year, everybody made it seem like he was with the Bad News Bears, like with this Davis thing. They at least had veterans who weren't afraid in a big game. You know, I think we overreact to this stuff sometimes. So, Davis, Drew Holiday is really good. I'm sorry. Mirotić is a good player.
First of all, I'm very proud of you that you're getting the itch on point.
I practiced before I came up.
Second of all, this came up when over the holidays, I did a piece when the AD stuff was blowing up. I did a piece where I said, you know, there's an argument to be made that if and when he's traded, this is the most important trade, not sign and trade, not free agency signing. This is the most important trade in terms of the significance of the main player traded since maybe Kareem. Like, he's that good. And I bounced this off 20 people, and some people said, yeah, that makes sense. And some people said, well, you know, I don't really distinguish. I think it's stupid to distinguish between player movement. And those discussions led you to a place where, like, it's not as significant as LeBron changing teams. It's not as significant as Shaq changing teams. And it's not as significant as KD changing teams. Like, those guys are top 10 all-time level players, top 12 at worst. AD at age 26 or 25 or whatever he is not quite there to, has not proven he can drive winning at that level quite yet. Like, think about the team that LeBron took to the finals in 2007 in Cleveland, right? Like, AD hasn't done anything close to that.
I think Shaq had just come off the 04 finals. He'd won three straight titles. He was the dominant.
No, I'm talking about Shaq. I'm talking about Shaq Orlando to LA move. That's a move that was more significant than whatever happens with AD.
Oh, 100,000% agree with you. And I was saying Shaq just getting traded to Miami, you could argue, was more significant, because at least when you traded for Shaq in 04, you knew you were going to either win the title or come damn close.
Shaq is underrated, don't you think?
Yeah, Shaq's underrated.
It's stupid. Part of it is his fault, because he was always out of shape and he didn't care as much as he should have. But, like, you just couldn't do anything with him. You just literally couldn't do anything.
If I'm New Orleans, I am not trading him unless I get a blue chipper back. And I'm basically going down with the ship, because we have a talented team. They have 12,000 fans a game. They have, like, three people covering it. It's one of the three worst markets. I'm sorry. It just is. Like, go by any metric. And if Davis has to leave because he feels like he's not getting enough shine, that's a really bad sign for where your franchise is going forward. And I would want to get a blue chipper back. I theorized on my podcast last week. I was saying I would try to get Ben Simmons for him. Like, if you think Davis is going to leave in a year and a half, if you're convinced that's going to happen, this is the time to trade him right now, with a year and a half left on his deal, when he actually, you know, you have a chance to keep him long term. And if Philly traded Simmons for him and threw in, like, the future Miami pick they have and whatever else they need to do to make the deal, that makes sense for Philly, because now you have Embiid and Davis, and what the hell is that? That's the scariest team. And then if you're New Orleans, you could basically do everything you're still doing. You have a good roster, and you can just turn it into the Simmons show. And that makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense to me is trading him for Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart and
Lonzo.
You know, Lonzo. Like, that, what is that going to do? That just puts you in Seattle in 3 years. I don't see it.
So it's funny you mentioned Ben Simmons, because I have a Sixers piece coming out tomorrow. And part of it is about me being a little bit annoyed that every time they lose a high-profile game, and almost always to the Celtics, there's an immediate flurry and of legitimate media coverage, not like crazy people on Twitter media coverage, legitimate media coverage, like, oh, they should just trade Simmons now because Simmons and Embiid don't work together. It doesn't work. They should just trade Simmons now. And so I started kicking around like, okay, so if they got to that place right now or in the next year, who are some players they would trade Ben Simmons for? What is the deal model of a Ben Simmons trade that makes any sense for them? And you realize very quickly that there are not many, but that one that you mentioned is That's one it. That makes sense. That may be literally the only like realistic, and it's only realistic because of AD's contractual situation, the only semi-realistic, like both teams might have a phone call about it, Ben Simmons trade that actually exists. Now, I don't think it's going to happen, but that's the idea.
If I'm, I mean, the reality is Philly has been an unequivocal train wreck since last spring and has basically handled everything wrong. And they went into the summer last year. I mean, granted, they lost their GM. I have a little guilt in that one, but they had the 10th pick in the draft and a ton of cap space. And really didn't turn it into anything. And then they ended up salvaging it with the Butler trade, which we all knew was a potential red flag from a chemistry standpoint.
And they knew too. They're not dumb.
And they knew. But that was I don't want to say a panic trade, but it was a home run swing that I don't feel like they really needed to do if they had handled their summer correctly. They just didn't. You look at even how a team like Milwaukee handled their summer, and Milwaukee went into it with a plan. And they came out and they have a better team. They hired a great coach. They made good free agent signings and they're in a much better place. Philly's the opposite. So I don't know what place Philly's in.
So we're talking about two of the teams on our list. So we might as well. I think they actually make for a fascinating contrast in this sense. Milwaukee's been the best team in the NBA statistically this whole year. So Philly built a team that is like, we got a lot of superstar talent that doesn't really fit together. Let's figure it out. We'll bet on talent. Yeah. Milwaukee is like, we have one supernova star. Let's get supplementary talent that, you know, won't blow anybody's socks off, but fits around that one guy and see how far we can go.
And let's play with a much faster pace and just let our athleticism and our speed and our three-point shooting
and
carry
so
us.
If you look at it, the gap between Giannis and Milwaukee's second best player, whether you think it's Middleton or Bledsoe, is, I think, bigger than Milwaukee would like and bigger than is typical for a, like, you know, typical post 2000 for a typical NBA champion. It's just the gap between number one and number two is huge. As good as those guys are, it's huge. And
it's reminiscent of the Cavs, like late 2000s.
Maybe. I think those guys, the Bucks are a little better than some of those guys.
No, I'm saying like from a talent standpoint, the drop off from one to two is significant.
So I think the playoffs are going to be an interesting test case for how far that strategy goes versus how far we'll just put three top 20 players on the floor together and see what happens. Now, one of them is obviously a completely anomalous player who refuses until very recently to actually shoot. But I just think it's interesting, but I don't know how we got on. I think the contrast between those two teams are interesting.
On that Milwaukee point, this goes back to my Davis point. Look at Milwaukee's roster and look at New Orleans's roster. Are you really telling me Milwaukee's roster after Giannis is better than New Orleans' roster after Davis?
Well, here's
and one if of, it is, it's like by a smidge.
Here's one of the big differences, though, and people underestimated this about New Orleans. I wrote it in one of
the No, I know what you're going to say. They can't play their
Right,
their,
that's it. All of dudes. Milwaukee's best players can be on the floor together. All of New Orleans' best players cannot. I mean, that makes a big, like, you have four good players that are way better than everyone else on a team. You can only play three of them unless you play Mirotić at the three. And if you play him at the three, he loses a lot of what makes him good.
I would trade. Sorry, I know this hurts your feelings. I actually feel like Mirotić could be flipped for something good back. And maybe that person is somebody that would then allow you to play Davis and Randall together at crunch time with a different type of wing. I mean, how do they not turn Mirotić into a decent point guard at this point? I just think New Orleans, I like their talent, but the talent doesn't fit the way that the Milwaukee talent fits. But just if you're just going player by player, it's not like Milwaukee is more talented than New Orleans. But Milwaukee's 28-11.
Well, and Milwaukee is finding ways, whether it's because they drafted really well and understood that these guys were good, or they're well coached, or both, or Giannis. But like, they're making players out of Sterling Brown and EJ Wilson And like all of a sudden it's like, man, Milwaukee's got like 11 dudes who you can put on the floor and be like, I'm comfortable with all these guys on the court. Like, and New Orleans hasn't been able to make that out of Solomon Hill and Tim Frazier and, you know, Cheick Diallo yet, and on and on and on. They just haven't been able to get there with those guys.
And Bledsoe, who I was 100,000% out of, and I think is going to be the guy that ultimately cost them a chance to make a finals, because I just don't buy that you can make the finals with Bledsoe as your lead guy with the style they're playing. And but I think they've gotten more out of him this year than I ever expected. I still don't love his game, but at least he's playing hard. It seems like his attitude's better.
He's the captain of my he's having a good year, but holy shit, would I be afraid to pay his next contract team for this season.
Well, you know, this it's funny though, because he's on his best behavior because he's a free agent.
So it's what I'm saying.
So you're getting the perfect Bledsoe season out of him. And I guess my point is that's not even that good of a season. But Giannis is petrifying. He's just petrifying. I did my trade value list last month and it was like,
I'm so happy to have that back on my list.
Oh, thanks, buddy. It was just Giannis was the clear number one. There was no doubt. And this is a league that has Anthony Davis, who's 25 and who's probably the most talented power forward in the history of the league. And it's like Giannis is number one. There's no question. Giannis is almost at 13 rebounds a game.
Is the MVP,
think about that.
Is the MVP a two-man race right now?
Well, I mean, if Harden's gonna average 36 points,
well, then
a game
it's over.
Season,
obviously,
like,
I mean,
I think what Harden's done these last 11 games is like everything I want from basketball. He's like, I just don't want my season to go down the drain. I've got this, guys. And you, what's interesting is usually when somebody ball hogs like this, ball hog's the wrong word. When somebody dominates kind of every possession like he does, the teammates will check out a little bit, or they're, you know, I mean, you sense a little of, oh, it's, you're Harden and we're the Hardeners. But like you watch that game when he won in overtime on Thursday night, and the way his teammates reacted after, like they were just so happy to be in his presence. I feel like he's elevated a level as kind of a great player. Does that make sense? Am I making sense? Like there's some level he's gone up where like even his teammates are like, this is a pleasure. I've never seen anything like this.
Well, he's averaging 42 a game since CP got hurt. So he has for the last,
I mean, that's insane. But that's insane. And then the stuff he's doing, the threes he's taking, his footwork is really like top three or four all time in the NBA that I can remember. Like Mikhail, Hakeem, him, Duncan. He's the only non-big man who has footwork like that. Kobe, maybe. But it's just incredible. And I went from thinking that they were going to be in the lottery and Darryl was going to get fired, my friend, to thinking that they're an absolute threat.
We haven't talked much about them. You know, I think Rivers helps them. Capella has found his game from last year. If CP stays healthy, yeah, I was high on them to start the season, and I felt like a fool. Like I said, I still think this is the second-best team in the West. I still think they might be as good as any team in the East. And they made me look like an idiot. And, you know, we'll see when CP gets back. I want to see sort of what they look like. I just didn't buy, even as captain of the Trevor Ariza is really good and underrated team, I just didn't buy that he mattered this much.
Me neither.
And Luke Bamute did not matter at all. Like, he just didn't play in the playoffs. So, like, I just didn't buy that, even though I understood conceptually what those guys meant to their team and how they could structure their team and how they could structure their defense. I just didn't buy that they were going to win 15 fewer games because those guys were gone.
So they have two big variables. One is Gordon's having just a crap year.
They all are. They're all really shooting like crap until James got high. CP's shooting like crap. They're all shooting like crap.
And then the other thing is CP just the rest of his career? Where he just keeps getting hurt. Like, this was never a guy who was famously in crazy shape, except for that one year when everybody wrote about how he trained with the Olympian and all that stuff. And I think he might have even played 82 games that year. But he was always like one of those guys that seemed like he was playing his way into shape as the season went along, much like Shaq. It's like point guard Shaq. When somebody just keeps injuring hamstrings and stuff like that, I just think that's a red flag that this is somebody that's not going to age well. And, you know, to borrow a football thing, it reminds me a little of the Josh Gordon thing with the Patriots, where they all of a sudden were really relying on Josh Gordon, who's not reliable.
What position
and I wonder,
does he play?
Like, he was a wide receiver. But he'd had all these personal issues for years and years, and all of a sudden was our number one deep threat. And just game by game, it's like, this makes me nervous. Like, he could flake at any time, and he ended up flaking. And with Chris Paul, it's like, once they actually start relying on him, do you trust him to last for 10 straight weeks in the playoffs? With what a grind the playoffs are. I just don't trust it.
Who do the Patriots play this week?
Patriots are home for the Chargers, and it's not looking great.
Why?
A lot of upset buzz for the Chargers.
Well, I saw Mays' piece about this is Phillip Rivers' last chance.
Yeah, there's a lot of red. Brady's, it's not good, Zach. I don't want to talk about it. If Houston doesn't win the West, who do you think would win the West in their spot?
Well, I was going to say there is one team we haven't talked about yet that's on our list. We have not said literally a word about them. And they are a team that's very close to my heart.
Don't do it.
Led by a player that is very close to my heart.
Don't do it.
They are the currently number one in the West.
Oh, God.
You just I don't know what you're telling me not to do. I'm going to ask you. So you just don't buy the Denver Nuggets? Sounds like,
nah,
you don't buy them.
I don't.
Wow. Why?
I don't. I think they're a regular season success story. That's my take.
Seventh in offense, ninth in defense.
By the way, I'm going to get crucified on Denver Stiffs now. Is that their blog? Denver Stiffs?
Yeah, they're
Simmons.
They're
nice people. Simmons hates the Nuggets.
They're nice people, though.
No, I love watching the Nuggets. I just think they have a lot of young dudes, and I really worry about them getting stops. I don't care. You can tell me whatever their defensive, you know, per 100 possessions. I don't care. I know what I watch in the last 5 minutes. And I think they're going to have trouble getting stops against really good teams in the playoffs. And that's what makes me nervous. I also don't think now I'm going to get in trouble. Their home court advantage sucks. What the hell is going on in Denver? Why are there 5,000 fans from the other teams at half of these games? What's happening?
Well,
where are the Nuggets fans? See, now I made you uncomfortable. Where are the Nuggets fans? Where are you?
I haven't been to a game in Denver this year.
I noticed from League Pass.
Every time I watch them, they're bragging about whatever X consecutive sellout this is. And it's not a very high number, but any team whose broadcast team is constantly bragging about the attendance means the attendance has been a problem in the past.
God, the Celtics play there and it's like half of Boston's there.
Well, that's the Celtics everywhere other than four or five markets.
I'm telling you, you watch. Watch on the League Pass.
I don't know where. Oh, Denver. The defense is – so if you're going to doubt them, and I don't blame you for doubting them. Like, I think they're getting lucky on defense. They are only three teams in the league allow more shots at the rim, and I think only one allows more threes. I actually had an interesting text debate with Stan Van Gundy last week about whether all of us make too much of a big deal out of how many threes a team allows on defense. And he pointed out a lot of the league's best defenses this year allow, including the Celtics, give up a lot of threes. But if you're going to give up a lot of threes, then it's probably best that you also don't give up a lot of shots at the rim. And I think Denver opponents are shooting like 33.5% from three or something crazy like that. I do think they're getting a little lucky. I mean, they're playing hard. They are playing hard. They're closing
I like that.
Out. They're closing out. They're rotating. They haven't had their best lineup at all. So their starters have played 46 minutes. The same lineup played 65 minutes all of last year, and they're plus a lot in both those samples. And Millsap is their best defensive player, hasn't really played that much.
So I would argue that is, in a weird way, a benefit and is also something that really would have helped the Celtics this year. Because the Nuggets, like the Celtics, have too many guys, but they've always had like two missing. So everybody's getting enough minutes. My question is, what happens when they have everybody back? Now you have like 11 guys who want to play, and we just saw this happen with the Celtics. It was bad. I also, they remind me of that. What year was it when the Nuggets had the team when it was like they had no superstar? Now the Nuggets, Jokic is a superstar, but the Nuggets had that one team was like Lawson and Gallinari and Aflalo.
2013, lost in the first round to the Warriors, I believe.
But remember they were really good in the regular season?
They were the third seed. And I believe they won 57 games. And
yes.
Gallo got hurt right before the playoffs, and Fareed got hurt right before the playoffs, but played. And the Warriors, that was the Warriors coming out party. That was like, oh, God, that was the year they beat the Nuggets and then pushed the Spurs
right
to six.
Right. So there's a little fear of that. Now, on the flip side, Jokic is incredible. I love watching him. It's like the old 1980s grainy YouTube Sabonis highlights have come to life every day on my league pass. I like that. And, you know, I'm not sure their guards are good enough. Like really ultimately, I think this has become a guards league to some degree. And I just keep thinking about a playoff series if they're down like 3-2, you know, and at some point you're going to need like somebody on the perimeter to be like, I got this, guys. So who is that for this team?
Well, Jamal Murray is one of the now part of the reason you can't figure him out is he's only 21. He's not even 22 yet.
I like his upside.
No, he's averaging 18 a game. It's not like his upside is far away. But there are entire weeks where it feels like every game is like Jamal Murray went 4 of 13 and scored 12 points. And then he scores 45. And you're like, well, can I just get the steady one, the steady guy that can score 20 a night?
But that's the problem. He's a heat check guy.
He's 21. He's 21. The problem is he's 21.
He's a 21-year-old heat check guy, but in a playoff series, they're actually going to need him, and he can't be a heat check guy. He needs to be like a relatively reliable guy, and that's my fear with them. And I you know, it's they have to ride it out. I don't think they should make a trade or anything. I really like Monty Morris. I don't know what happened with that. I never understand the draft when I think he was – what was he like in the 20s? He was 26 or 22, something like that. I don't understand how somebody can
NBA. I think he's a second-round pick, no?
Was he a second-round pick? I don't even remember. He certainly wasn't a lottery pick. But it's just funny to me that guys like that can just come into the
league. He was the 51st pick.
Oh, my God. He was 51st?
And I believe he owns the NCAA record for highest assist-to-turnover ratio, which he has duplicated in the NBA.
These guys have, I mean, I can see this happening in 1981, but it's 2019. Everybody has 40 people working for them. How does Monty Morris go 51st? I don't get it. And I actually think he might be the X factor for them as the season goes along, because there's something about when he's out there. I like watching when he's out there.
Well, he and Murray have played well together. I mean, look, they're going to be super deep when they get everybody back. It's going to be hard to play Malik Beasley and Torrey Craig and these guys that have actually helped them. And they've been playing Plumlee and Jokic together until the last two games, and those guys have actually been all right together.
Do you think they can get stops in a round one series against? I won't say Golden State because they're not going to play them. But let's say they go against Houston.
Imagine if
they're going toe to toe against Harden in round one.
Well, Houston has killed them. Houston has been the kryptonite for the Nuggets. So that's a matchup that they would prefer to avoid. Wouldn't it be awesome if like the Nuggets somehow finish with the first seed and the Lakers finish with the eighth seed, which is what's happening right now, and like the feel good Nuggets get LeBron in the first round. That would be a fun series. I would like to see LeBron Jokic for whatever games. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I don't know if that would be a great matchup for the Lakers.
Denver's good, man. I think they're good.
Can I ask you a quick aside question?
Sure.
Where are you on Lonzo mentally right now?
Like in my own mental brain or his mental brain?
No, you. Like where are you on Lonzo? Somebody's offering you Lonzo stock. Lonzo's like Twitter stock or something. And somebody's like, I have Lonzo stock. I have a great deal. You can really go all in on Lonzo stock right now. Are you considering it?
I'd buy, but I would be paying attention to the market over the next week to see if I can get off it.
It's a flip it? Interesting.
He does things that are, I mean, you're talking about Jokic, right? Like I remember.
No, I was talking about Lonzo.
No, but I remember sitting in Denver last year with a bunch of NBA people who were there having a beer after a game, and we had the Jokic Towns Porzingis debate. Who would you take? Now this is last fall, so Jokic is blowing up, but it's not like this. And one of my favorite guys in the league who's a guy that thinks a little differently than everybody else, in part because he used to play, I think, at a high level, said, I just think there's something special about the way that Jokic connects the other guys on the court. Like, I get that he's not a rim protector. I get that, you know, he's not going to go to the post 20 times a game like Towns, although he's starting to do that. I just think there's something special about how he moves the ball around that you guys are missing if you're taking the other guys. And I think Lonzo has that. Now, the shot is the shot. The free throws are a problem that until he got booed last week, nobody is talking about the fact that a point guard for an NBA team shoots one free throw a game and makes 45% of them, which is like a disaster. It's a disaster. And exactly. The defense comes and goes. And I think the reason I look to flip is like, I just don't see the super engaged, like I want to do everything and be everywhere, Lonzo Ball. enough. Like the guy scores 21 and 8 the other night and 0 the game before. And there are too many games where I watch him and I'm like, well, why? He's not doing anything. And it's not because of LeBron. It's not just because of LeBron.
No, this was him in college too. This was my big fear with him. He's very comfortable not being in the spotlight during a game. And it's a little bit, but there's a little bit of an alphaness that's missing with him. That also makes him really fun to play with, you know, and that's why I still feel like he's an awesome fit with LeBron, because the ball just moves. He's super fun to play with. Doesn't have a big ego. Really good defensive player. Fast, jumps passing lanes, stuff like that. And I'm still buying stock, but going back to that point you said about Jokic, that's my favorite thing about him. And that's like, honestly, the number one thing I look at with NBA players, like, are you fun to play with? Can your teammates connect with you? And I think that's why we were so frustrated with Westbrook 2 years ago and whatever the hell was happening there, where it was just like this guy just gunning. And that's why I've been so fascinated by this Harden thing, because everything runs through him, but it has a way of connecting his teammates to him that I don't know how he's pulled off. Like 06 Kobe, who was the last guy to average 35 a game, his teammates really felt like, you know, like they were, you know, the hired help. It doesn't feel that way with what's happening with Harden. It really does feel like everybody's bought into it. Jokic is the greatest example of that. Jokic is like, if I cut, I'm going to get the ball. If I go backdoor in this guy, he's getting me the pass. If I run pick and roll, I'm going to get the ball back. His teammates love playing with him. I think it's a big reason why they succeed.
He throws these alley-oops. Like there are alley-oops, and then there are like the Nuggets alley-oops, which no other team does, where it's like Jokic is at the top of the key. Someone cuts backdoor, and he just throws the ball to where they're going, and they jump from like the dotted line, catch it, and lay it up in midair. Like they have all these like weird layup alley-oops from passes from the three-point arc that like no one else has, and it's just like they're not even open. He just throws the ball, and they get open because they know the ball's coming, so they jump before the defender realizes what's happening. It's just very
– he's breathtaking. I mean – in my book, he's breathtaking. In my book, I was so all in on Bill Walton, and I ended up, the epilogue of my book is about Bill Walton, but he was the last center who was able to do this, which was you were able to run the whole offense through him, and he was so unselfish. He just made everybody else better. And then on the other side, protected the rim as well as just about anybody. Jokic can't do that, but I think offensively, you can even look at his numbers. His numbers are actually very similar to Bill Walton when Bill Walton was healthy. Just when you're a center and you're averaging over 7 assists a game, I don't care about like the pace and how things are different and the stats are bumped a little bit. Like that's just a crazy stat. Centers shouldn't average 2 assists a quarter, but that's basically what he's about to do. And,
I was in Toronto a month ago. He had 16 assists, I think. And halfway through the game,
amazing.
Halfway through the game on press row, he already had 11. We were like, is he going to get 20 assists? And Everyone started counting up, like to the point that the scorers table missed an assist for like a minute. They didn't credit him. And we were about to run down to the scorers table, be like, no, that's number 13. Get it up on the board. We were all rooting for 20. This dude's a center. He almost got 20 assists.
There's also one other weird thing about him that I love. And this is totally random, but he's averaging 1.5 steals a game. I like when big dudes are actually active and moving around, and, you know, he's not the greatest rim protector, but at least he gives a shit and he tries. And I think there's going to be a game in like March when they're going to go against the right team that doesn't care anymore. And you could see your 20 assist game. There's going to be some team that's just not trying on defense and they're just backdooring the hell out of him. And he's going to have like 15 assists at halftime.
I hope he gets in shape.
By the way, is it more fun if we don't talk about Toronto at all and Canada flips out, or do we have to talk about?
See, I've talked about Toronto enough. I'm putting Toronto. I had Pascal Siakam on my podcast last week. I've done enough.
I did
Toronto.
See that. Toronto is a major suck up.
Toronto is really, really good, and you know they're the favorites.
I have one Toronto question for you, and then we don't have to talk about them anymore.
Okay.
Can you make the finals? And can you win the finals when your best lineup is Kawhi, Lowry, Danny Green, Siakam, Ibaka, which has been a very successful lineup this whole season? But is that the lineup of a team that you could see in the NBA finals in crunch time?
Who's the Eastern Conference lineup that's – I mean, first of all, Kawhi and Lowry are Kawhi is the second best player in the conference, and he's not far from the first guy.
Are we sure he can play 8 straight months of basically being out there healthy?
Well, they've sat him out every back to back. They've gotten a chance to, you know, they're slow pedaling that. And lately, he just looks like
he does look more athletic.
You just can't keep him away from the rim. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, you just can't get him away from the rim. Like, those top two guys are really, really good and really complimentary in a way that I don't think any other top two guys are amongst the Eastern Conference elite teams.
So the X factor for them is Lowry and, you know, his age and the fact that he's getting cortisone shots, and I don't know. That makes me nervous.
Well, and
do you get 100% healthy Lowry in June?
And the names that you mentioned are all going to have to prove it in the playoffs, other than Danny Green, who we know what he is. But, you know, Siakam and Anobi, you know, Ibaka has already proven it in the play. You know what I mean? They're going to play guys who teams are going to test them, and the stage is going to test them in a way that just like – that like Pascal Siakam has a borderline all-star case. He's a really good league pass nerd player. He's a good player. He's a good basketball player. It's clear he's a good player. Then you start stacking him up against like – the teams that are the really good teams that are going to squeeze their rotation so they only play 8 guys, and you start to look at the names on the front, like, damn, all these guys are really, really good. Like, in relative terms, he's not as good in the playoffs as he is in the regular season.
The Siakam, Ibaka, you have two guys who basically don't shoot threes well. That doesn't bode
well. Well, Pascal's coming. Pascal's at 35%, and Ibaka's at 30, but we'll take
Ibaka's at 30. Yeah,
he'll take him, though.
Take him and miss him. I still like, and this is now the homer in me, I still like Kyrie, Horford, Morris, Smart, and Tatum. But the key to that is whether Tatum, who for whatever reason has gotten worse than he was as a rookie, which I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Well, we're living it in Utah, too.
That was predictable. Tatum wasn't. Why? Thought Tatum was going to like be an all-star this year. I don't know, because The thing to him was, is like, just, we need more of everything you're doing and all your stats will go up and it'll be great. And it's like, he doesn't get to the free throw line. His 3-point shooting got worse, which is, you could have been predicted. That was predictable, but his shot selection is just worse. It drives me nuts that he doesn't go to the line. The Celtics are under 20 free throws a game for the season, which embarrassing.
They're the second lowest free throw rate in the league behind Orlando, which I think Orlando,
it's embarrassing.
I don't know if there's something in the rules that Orlando is just not allowed to shoot free throws, but they're last every single year.
Right.
And their Boston's starting lineup, by the way, the one they're using now with the Marcuses, it's physical and nasty and all this. It has a lower free throw rate than their team. Like, they get to the line even less with that lineup. It's very strange.
I don't understand it. I said this on my pod last week, so sorry for repeating it, but I actually feel like the key to them is I want more Kyrie. I don't think he has to go full 42 points a game Harden, but I think at some point somebody's got to kind of grab the reins. This can't be a democracy anymore, and this is Kyrie's team, and he's unbelievable. He's so good, and he's having probably his most efficient season he's ever had, but I just kind of want more. Well, I really do. I want to see him just go out and kick ass. Maybe he's pacing himself for the last 2 months. I think he's one of the 5 most unstoppable offensive players in the league. And far too often, they're down 12 when he's like, all right, guys, fine. I'll score 10 straight points. All right. Okay, I'll do it, I guess.
So because
it's like, just do it.
Because it's you, let's end with 2 quick Celtics things. One, an observation, and the other, a question. My observation is they also need, like, last season's Al Horford all the time.
Yeah, he hasn't been healthy all year.
And he's starting to look friskier. He's starting to look a little better.
Yep.
And my question to you to wrap it up would be, is this the starting lineup for the rest of the season? Or do you think we get to March, April, and one of Hayward or Brown or both is back in the starting lineup?
I don't want to talk about Hayward because it's too depressing.
He's perked up lately. He's had some good games, a couple 30-point games against the Wolves.
Exactly. If we played the Wolves every game, it would be great. He has other games where, like, he was 0-for-6 against San Antonio. Just the goose egg. He has games where you can kind of, you know, in the first quarter that not only does he not have it, he doesn't want any part of contact or anything. And then other games where he's a little friskier. I just think it's going to take time. Like, how long did it take Paul George to look like Paul George? 3 years? And 2.5 years or whatever? And I think that injury was so devastating. His 3-point shooting's gotten a little better. The crazy one to me is Jaylen. And I've argued about this with people here because some people, like KOC, was like, no, it's predictable that he was going to go down. I feel the opposite. I felt like he had Paul George potential. And he was on a pace statistically where his first 2 years and the big game experience he had and the way he was evolving was basically put him on pace with Paul George by any statistical metric. And then he cratered this year in a really significant way. And I heard your podcast with Jackie. We don't need to rehash all the reasons, but that was somebody they were counting on as like a major chess piece. And he's just been bad. Like just point blank, he's been bad. So, I also don't think they knew Morris was going to be a borderline all-star. So maybe it flips, maybe that flips a little, but I think they need to figure out who their best five are. They need Horford to get healthy and they need Kyrie to take a little more ownership and they need Tatum to really start showing something. Three free throws a game is embarrassing. It just is.
I have one last Celtics question for you, Elad. What do you want to happen with the Memphis pick that is top eight protected and they are now tied for 13th/14th in the West, sitting 9th if you did the draft order right now, with Dylan Brooks now out for the season. So now they're Brooksless. They got no more Brooks. All the Brooks are gone. Gasol has fallen off a cliff for the last 20 games. What do you want to roll that over a year when it becomes top six protected and maybe they're even worse? As a fan of the Boston Celtics, what do you want?
So my dad is very focused on the standings at all times. we definitely want this pick to roll over. We do not want to have it this year. The Sacramento thing, it's hard to complain after the Brooklyn, you know, tapping into the Brooklyn oil like we did all decade. But Sacramento being good and even more frustrating, being really fun to watch. And like, I can't root against De'Aaron Fox. I'm supposed to because we have their pick. But I love watching him and Buddy. I like almost everybody in that roster. But when you look at the standings, Sacramento, Minnesota, Memphis, Dallas, one of those teams just has to crater, right? Cause they're all like in that 28 and 21, 19 and 22, 18 and 22. But you know, if you look at just the history of conference standings, it's really rare to just have one bad team and a bunch of teams right around the middle. And then the Zion thing, there's just all kinds of dynamics and I can't tell who's going to crater. If I was Memphis, I would probably crater at this point because you're not making the playoffs.
There are three teams with negative point differentials in the West, and one of them is the Suns. So really there are two teams with negative point differentials in the West, two real teams, the Kings and the Grizzlies. And so I think you're right to pinpoint one of them as not. I said a couple podcasts ago I did a Kings-focused one where I predicted their record, I think, at 39-43. Like I think they're legitimately pretty solid, and the Cantor rumors – confirm something that I suspected, which is if they're close, they're going to try to make the playoffs without mortgaging any of their cap space and all that. They'll try for little upgrades here and there because it's just, and I think they should. Like when it's been that long, you should try. Why not? Like it's been so long. It would be so fun to have
Tim Hardaway Jr.
Oh, that's compromising your cap space. Get off the Tim Hardaway Jr. bandwagon. All right, we're going to do this again next week, right? That's the plan.
Yeah, you're coming on mine, and we're going to do a whole bunch of half-season stuff. I thought this went well, though. It was fun to talk to you on the pod, as always.
I will be out in L.A. in 11 days as well, so maybe we'll see each other at – I think that's Warriors week. I think the Warriors have, like, a couple of games out in L.A., so maybe I'll see you at one of those.
How old is your daughter now?
Almost 4.
I can't – this is right when your job performance is going to start to get affected. It's going to be great. I can't wait to watch.
Why? Yeah.
Because when they hit 4, all of a sudden now you got recitals and you got.
That's true.
They hit 6, they start playing sports a little bit more. Now on the weekends, you're at a soccer game instead of watching Orlando Philly.
I have to resolve. At a certain point, you have to make an internal resolution where, like, that's good. That's okay. If your job performance slips a little bit because you have, like, actual human being things to do.
Yeah.
And they involve little children that you helped produce into the world. Like that's what it should be. Should happen.
You're preaching the choir, my friend. I'm just telling you, it's coming.
All right.
So it's right now it's like a sprained ACL, but when she hits 6, it becomes a torn ACL. And you can rehab. You can be 90% as good, but
you think you're joking. my wife is laughing at me because twice in the span of 6 days. So like I said, I'm an active playground father. And my daughter really likes, she's made up this game where she likes me to pretend that I'm a wolf. I think it's because we read her the Big Bad Wolf story a couple times. So I run around growling and chasing her twice in 6 days, once in Toronto and once in Miami. You know, you chase them under these, like, into these caves that are on the playgrounds and underneath these bars. I knocked my head twice in 6 days to the point that I was bleeding once. And I was like, I'm going to get a concussion. Chasing my daughter, like my job performance is like I just killed a lot of brain cells. Like it's dangerous out there.
God,
wound Harry running around the playground
only gets worse. Wait till you have the birthday party, bouncy castle parties. That is like a UFC. kids getting taken out left and right, elbows, headbutts. Yeah, it's bad.
All right, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, Zach.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.